Our politicians have to get our votes to get into office, but it seems like once they get into office, we don't always like them so much. Recent polling from Gallup found that none of the top elected officials at the federal level have job approval ratings above 50%. House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries is the closest at 46%. House Speaker Mike Johnson is at 40%. President Biden, 39%. Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell at just 27%. Here in Wisconsin, Governor Evers' job approval rating was above the threshold at 53% in Marquette Law School poll surveys last fall. When Senator Ron Johnson was reelected in 2022, his approval rating in polls was around 37%. And as Senator Tammy Baldwin runs for reelection this year, her favorability rating most recently sat at 40. So why is it that we elect and reelect politicians that we don't like? At least we tell pollsters we don't like. And has it always been this way? You could join in at 800-642-1234. Why do you think many politicians get low job approval ratings? Why do you think politicians with low approval ratings get reelected? Do these ratings matter? Do you think our politicians are less likable over time? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Charles Franklin is a professor of law and public policy at Marquette University, where he directs the Marquette Law School poll. Charles, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks for having me. Good to be here again.
Now, my gut says, Charles, hey, maybe in America we've never liked politicians so much, but has it always been this way? Or have we seen politicians having, maybe even sustaining, higher approval ratings in past years?
No, we have seen sustained high approval ratings. We also see ups and downs, even for pretty popular presidents. But there was a major change that took place in presidential approval beginning in the George W. Bush term, continuing through part of Obama's term, and especially throughout the Trump and now Biden terms, where people are generally more negative, and especially if you're not of the president's party, you're extraordinarily negative.
Did it used to be that, okay, if I am a member of Party A, I might still look at that president from Party B and say, hey, I might not vote for them, but I approve of a lot of what they're doing. And I'll tell that pollster, yeah, I'm cool with them, even though they're not on my team.
There was a lot more of that in the Bill Clinton and earlier terms. It's always the case that partisans of the president's party like him better, no surprise, than out-partisans. But back in the Clinton years, out-partisans would give the president a 30% approval rating, maybe a 25, maybe a 35, sometimes a 40. But starting in the second term of George W. Bush, we saw Democratic approval drop below 10% and stay there through the rest of his term. In Obama's term, except for the first and the last year, in the middle years, Republicans gave Obama less than a 10% approval. And with Donald Trump and now Barack Obama,
Joe Biden.
Joe Biden, the out party has been generally below 10% approval. So that's quite a shift. We also used to see in the 70s, 80s, and 90s that when the economy and world affairs were going well, approval would go up with both in-party and out-party partisans. And when times were bad, it would drop across all partisan groups. Now we're seeing that very low approval from the out-party stay in single digits no matter what happens in the world, while the president's party are quite positive about him. So it's a greater divide and a greater translation of partisanship into approval.
Okay, it seems like this has got to mean something, this pretty significant change. I assume the word polarization comes in here somewhere. Charles, what's going on?
Yeah, polarization is the usual term. In political science, we also talk about it as negative partisanship, mm-hmm. that we don't love our party so much more than we used to, but we've come to really dislike the other party much more. And you see that reflected in favorability measures towards the political parties, Democrat and Republican, but you also see it reflected in these very negative views of the other party's president when they're in office.
Charles Franklin is with us from Marquette University, director of the Marquette Law School poll, talking about approval ratings for politicians, presidents, but not just presidents, and why they seem to have gone down over the years. You could join in with your questions, your theories at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Let's go to your calls now. Elizabeth is with us in Madison. Elizabeth, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. First of all, I think that even though we think that politicians are not that are honest, they turn out to be not honest because something surfaces, and it's very discouraging. The other thing is, as a former teacher, some of the behaviors that I see these adults exhibiting are the exact behaviors I've seen in preschool and kindergarten, where we actually teach children how to get along and how to solve conflicts. And perhaps some of these politicians ought to take some lessons from that. And that's all I have to say.
Elizabeth, thanks a lot for the call. Charles, I think there's often been a perception over the years that politicians may not always be honest. Is that getting worse, though, over time? Is Elizabeth onto something that maybe part of the reason their approval ratings are down is politicians are less trustworthy?
Well, there's been a clear change in cynicism and lack of trust in politicians and in government. That goes back all the way to the 60s, but it's continued to come down year after year after year of people saying they simply don't trust the federal government to do what's right. And when it comes to candidates or elected officials, as Elizabeth said, you know, there's a sense of negativity about their performance, whether that's scandals that come up about each president or whether it's something else. There's also a little bit more of gloom and doom in the last 20 years than there was in the 80s and 90s. We see that with very high percentage, well over 60%, saying the country's headed in the wrong direction. And that wrong direction measure has sort of stayed there even as the economy's gotten better or gotten worse over the last 20 years in a way that it wasn't as negative in the 80s and 90s.
Thanks for that call. Lisa joins us now in Madison. Lisa, hello.
Hi. I just thought it was interesting that your guest was talking about a change in the second Clinton administration. And I think it was in 1990 when Newt Gingrich distributed a pamphlet to GOP politicians. The pamphlet was called Language, a Mechanism of Control. And they were given terms that when you were discussing Republican policies, they were very positive terms to include. And when you were discussing Democratic policies, it was very negative terms. And that has really gone on steroids in the last 5 years or so. But I think that was one of the initial trends, too, that we saw taking place in this issue.
Lisa, interesting. Charles, what do you think?
Yeah, I think in the late 90s, and that's the period when Gingrich was Speaker of the House and led the Republican seizure of control, or winning of control, I should say, in the 1994 elections, that we started to see a more conflictual politics. The Republicans had been out of power in the House of Representatives for decades. And in taking it back under Gingrich, you saw the success of those aggressive attacks from Republicans and Gingrich specifically. I think as the cable news media grew in the following years, in the early 2000s up till now, you see politicians finding that appearing on cable news or other kind of mass media outlets gives them a chance to light fires, if you will, to push their proposal in sometimes incendiary terms. And that seems to have helped the people that portray those kinds of policies, not hurt them. So as a result, we've also seen a more intense language, if you will, for politics and how we deal with the opponent. Certainly the old days that we look back wistfully on, when Tip O'Neill and Ronald Reagan could fight over policy during the day but get together for a drink in the evening, Democrat and Republican disagreeing on a lot, but also not letting that be a barrier to compromise from time to time. Those times have gotten much, much harder since the late Clinton years and throughout the 21st century.
Lisa, thanks for the call. Steve is with us now in Stevens Point. Steve, hello.
Hi, how are you guys?
Good. What do you want to bring up, Steve?
Well, I just wanted to comment or I guess ask the question whether or not the sort of specialized niche news outlets and talk radio has sort of fueled the polarization that we see in today's politics. I often hear when I listen to one side of things how the other side hates America and wants to destroy the country. And as a former member of the military, I never felt that way about my fellow members of the military who might vote differently than I did. And I guess I was interested in your guest's comments on that.
Steve, interesting, the impact of partisan media outlets, Charles.
Yeah, I think there's no question that they have added to this, but they've done it by giving platforms for people to go and talk on. So if you go to more liberal channels, you'll hear an awful lot of criticism of Donald Trump. If you go to conservative outlets, overwhelming criticism of Joe Biden. I don't think that it's new in the sense that we've always had partisan media in this country. Go back more than 100 years to the Civil War, and you can see that. But it does, in the last 20 years or so, maybe a little more with the rise of AM talk radio, provided channels for ideological programming that found a receptive audience that was popular and that pushed the boundaries of what you could say and what kind of charges you could leverage. So again, I come back to the question of what are the positive talking points that politicians make today, as opposed to what are the negative talking points? And at least to my ear, we see an awful lot more of the negative talking points than of the positive talking points. Again, to go back to Ronald Reagan, Morning Again in America in his 1984 reelection campaign was an election campaign filled with optimism and hope. I don't see a whole lot of campaigns built on that optimism and hope these days.
Thanks again for the call, Steve. Charles Franklin is with us, director of the Marquette University Law School poll, talking about politician approval ratings and why so many elected officials are not well-liked in polls and why that's, in general, gone down over time. You could join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think drives up or down a politician's approval rating? Do you see a way to bring a politics back where somebody from one side could still like and respect someone from the other side? What do you want to hear from politicians and or the media and which media to help do that? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Verrett. We're picking up our conversation with Charles Franklin, law professor at Marquette University, director of the Marquette Law School poll. We're talking about why many politicians, especially at the national level, have low approval ratings in polls, despite needing a form of approval in the terms of votes to get into office in the first place. You could join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Back to your calls. Dawn is with us in Spring Green. Dawn, hi.
Hi. I was just calling to perhaps suggest a theory that one of the reasons the approval ratings go down once an individual is in office is because most people who run for office are successful at conning the voters. And the qualities that it takes to actually run and be elected for the job are not the qualities that it takes to successfully perform the job.
Interesting, Don. So the qualities of a good candidate and a good president or whatever job might be very different. What do you think?
Yeah, I think there's certainly some element to that. It's also that those promises that are made during the campaign inevitably fall a little short when it comes to actually implementing them. If we go back all the way to Franklin Roosevelt, for example, we often see that when presidents first come into office, they do generally get a bit of a honeymoon period, a little period of higher approval ratings. But But then over the next 3 years, their approval ratings tend to trend down, and that tends to happen regardless of who the president is. But in the fourth year, coming up on re-election, most of the presidents and those who win re-election see their approval ratings rise some in that fourth year after having come down in the second and third year. And then they sometimes start going down again after re-election. So there's this, the campaign really does boost the expectations and the hopes, only to then see it fall off some.
Thanks, Dawn, for calling in. Linda is with us now in Milwaukee. Linda, hi.
Hi. Yeah, I want to comment because as a voter, you know, I go and I want this person to, whoever it is, do a really great job. But sometimes I think voters just don't understand what the people we put in office have to deal with, all the partisanship, and they want miracles sometimes, and it's just not going to happen. This is a slow-moving and very difficult system to maneuver.
Linda, thanks for the point. Charles, voter expectations out of line, and that may lead to some disappointment in the polling.
Yeah, I say bravo. I think that's an excellent point to make. Getting anything through Congress is hard under the best of circumstances. It's hard even when your party has complete control of both the House and the Senate, as was true under Donald Trump in much of his term, and has been a challenge for Biden since the Republicans took the House back in 2022. I think that challenge of having bargaining partners on the other side is the thing I would point to. Again, if we go back to Clinton or George H.W. Bush or Ronald Reagan, they all had Congresses, at least part of the time, where they had a willing negotiating partner, and they did pass bipartisan legislation. That's been harder in recent years.
Thanks again for that call. I wanted to follow up on that, Charles, because I think, you know, there's the thought that, hey, a good politician finds compromises and is willing to be that negotiating partner you were just mentioning, but that might hurt them with the key demographic, the core voters in their own party. Do we have measures of how maybe that kind of moderation or negotiating might actually hurt candidates, maybe even in a primary race?
Well, we have indirect measures of where the people within the president's party disagree with him. We're seeing that now with the divide over how to deal with Israel and Hamas and their conflict. We see it in the Republican Party, or have seen it, over trade and tariffs and things like that, where different elements of the party have very different views on those things. So internal divides are very real. But when it comes to passing legislation, you either need to command a large enough majority in both houses of Congress to push through your measures, or you need at least some bipartisan support to get most things through. That bipartisan support has become much harder as cooperation with the other party has come to be seen as dealing with the enemy rather than negotiating with a fellow American.
Time for another caller. Jim is with us in Appleton. Jim, hi.
Hello.
What did you want to point toward, Jim?
I think all of this constant hate between the two parties started with Rush Limbaugh. When Rush Limbaugh first started on the radio, he was entertainment. He criticized, you know, the tree huggers and all of that. But when Clinton got into office, it just turned to rabid hate. You know, he just hated him with a passion. And if you were a Rush Limbaugh fan, you wouldn't do anything with a Democrat. There was no compromise, you know, and I think it's just escalated ever since he started.
Jim, thanks for the call. We're back again to the Bill Clinton, Newt Gingrich era, and a figure like Rush Limbaugh. Charles, can one media figure like that, do you think, make that big a difference?
Well, I don't think there's any doubt that Limbaugh transformed talk radio as a format, and especially AM talk radio on the conservative side. I think more broadly, listen to the rhetoric of elected officials or radio hosts, and it's fairly rare to find the ideological media being willing to give much credit to the other side, or good faith working with the other side. That's not what draws readers or viewers.
Thanks for the call, Kevin. In our last minute or so, Charles, you know, we see politicians with approval ratings in the 30s and 40s winning re-election sometimes. So approval is one thing. Getting the votes you need to get past the finish line is another. What do you think makes that difference?
Well, part of it is you're running against somebody else who's also not very well liked. In our current polling, we show Biden with a 40% favorable rating, Trump with a 42% favorable, and 20% to 25% are unfavorable towards both of them. But if those are the two primary candidates next fall, then people will be forced to make a choice. I also have to say that Republicans like Donald Trump a lot. 70% of Republicans are favorable towards him in our polling, but 80% of Democrats are favorable to Joe Biden in our polling. So while there's a lot of dislike about both of them, that comes especially from the out party and maybe, unfortunately, also from independents who are negative towards both of them.
Charles, we'll leave it there. Thanks, as always, for joining us today.
Thank you, Rob.
That's Charles Franklin, professor of law and public policy at Marquette University, where he directs the Marquette Law School poll. He was with us today to talk about political approval ratings and why many politicians aren't well-liked, and why the negatives tend to be higher than they used to be over time. Still time for you to share your ideas, maybe your hopes that things can get better. Email ideas@wpr.org. That's ideas@wpr.org.